back to everybody. Hope you guys are having a good day. One of the things that I think is clear to anybody when you go through some of the SharePoint training is just how massive this product really has become. It's reaching the point where it's quite a challenge to try to be an expert in all the things that it does. Waving down, friends? I see you. Okay. Oh, the music, right? I figured he'd get to that sooner or later. I was just going to keep doing the intro part until it went away. So anyway, hopefully you guys are getting a good look at a lot of the different technologies we have for developing in SharePoint. And this afternoon, we're going to finish up with a look at business connectivity services. So the question is, what the heck is business connectivity services? Well, important to recognize right off the bat that business connectivity services is not itself a technology. It's really an umbrella term that sits over a lot of different things that essentially allow us to access data that are in external systems, bring that data into SharePoint, and use it in a bunch of interesting ways. So the reason that I think you care about it is that this is really the primary mechanism that you should be using to get data from external systems inside to SharePoint. So in the past, now, perhaps you would have written a web part or something that queried a database and brought that information in directly by having ADO.NET code inside the web part. You won't do that anymore. Today, what you'll do with 2010 is instead you'll use business connectivity services to make that connection. And I hope to show you through the talk that one of the reasons you'll want to do it, or the reasons that you'll want to do it, is really that it's a much better technology. You have built-in throttling support to make sure people can't bring back millions of rows into your web part. You've got the ability to perform things like paging and streaming, and just a really nice infrastructure to use when talking to external systems. So let's go ahead and get started. This is our agenda right here. Talk a little bit about the basics of BCS. I think my goal here is really to start with the basics, but try very hard to get you pretty far along the spectrum in the short period of time that we have so that you can see everything through the intermediate types of solutions that we do all the way through the more advanced things, which we call .NET assembly connectors. So what we're going to see in our little spectrum of solutions here is that using business connectivity services, we can create solutions with no code at all. So on one end of the spectrum, it's sort of a point-and-click solution. And then we can go all the way over into Visual Studio and gain complete control over how the information is brought back and how it's displayed to the user. And where you are on that spectrum really just depends on what kind of solution you're trying to create. Okay, so the heart of the matter, the most important part of business connectivity services is to understand what are called external content types, or ECTs. Sometimes you hear them referred to as entities, but the real proper name is an external content type. An external content type is something that we define inside of a model that we'll make. So we're going to create an XML model that defines this external content type and describes the schema and the operations that can be performed on it. And that's going to be a representation of the type of data that we want to get back from the external source. And then that external content type is going to be usable both on the client side, using rich clients like Office 2010 clients or clients that you create yourself. And it's also going to be usable inside of SharePoint using thin clients we'll see them inside of what are called external lists, so we can surface the data as if it looks like a list. We can put it in web parts. We can use it as lookup fields. So this is really the heart and soul of it, is the definition of this external content type. How many folks in here did any work at all with what's called the BDC, or the Business Data Catalog? A few hands. Good. So if you've done work in the Business Data Catalog, all of that work will serve you well in business connectivity services. Sometimes people say that business connectivity services is, you know, the next version of the BDC that we have in 2007. I don't really like that, because I think it cuts short the significant improvements that we have in BCS. So BCS is more than just the next version. To me, it really makes the solutions that we were trying to make with external data possible now. But for those that have BDC experience, the external content type is really analogous to what we call an entity inside the BDC. And for those that did work in the BDC in 2007, you know that entities were defined in these large XML files that had the fields and operations that you want to perform. That core piece is essentially the same. It's more sophisticated, but that's essentially the same. So when we define external content types, we'll be doing it using XML files. Okay, so I said that once we get the data inside of SharePoint, we can use it in a bunch of interesting ways. The first interesting way, and the first demo I'll show you, and the first demo you always see around BCS, is the creation of an external list. So one of the first things that we can do is take data from an external system and then surface it in SharePoint as if it were a list. The list is backed by the data somewhere else, but it behaves in SharePoint, not 100%, but 85% like a regular list. From the end user's perspective, they have no way of really knowing that this isn't just a standard SharePoint list, but the data is all backed by, say, a database or a web service. And you get complete CRUD operations on that. So people can create new items in the list, they can edit the ones that are there, delete things, and those will all have an effect on the external system. We can also surface the data inside of web parts. So if you have some BDC experience, you're familiar with the business data catalog web parts, and those web parts allow you to show a set of data from an external system or an individual item from an external system. You can have items that are related to each other. That set of web parts is pretty much the same set of web parts that we have under BCS. So once an external content type is defined, it can be used in these built-in web parts as well. Before I talk about the SharePoint workspace, let's just round out things we can do with external content types. They can also be used as lookups in other fields. So you can take another list, you can take a standard SharePoint list and build a lookup off of an external content type, which allows you to do things like have an external content type that represents customers in your customer relationship management system, and then have a lookup field where you can pick a customer for a particular item. We also can use the values from external content types to supplement profile information. So if you have an HR system that has most of your employee profile information in it, you can use external content types to access that external system and then supplement the profiles that SharePoint's showing with language proficiency, you know, years in service, whatever it is that you're keeping in that HR system. And finally, one of the key things that we get is that external content types can be content sources for search. So we can use them inside of search, crawl the external system, and actually build up an index against that, and then go into the search center, do a search, and get results back from a database or get results back from a web service. So pretty powerful ways that you can use it. We won't have a chance to look at all of those things. I mean, I could spend easily an entire day and probably more doing BCS. I hadn't mentioned it yet, but I'm working on a book on just BCS called Professional Business Connectivity Services. So it really is very, very big, and I want to be clear that we're just going to be scratching the surface on some of this. Okay, so on to the SharePoint workspace then. Not really in the BCS family per se, but an important part is the SharePoint workspace, which allows us to take things out of SharePoint offline. So you can use the SharePoint workspace to point at an entire site, for example, and say, I'd like to take that offline with me, and then have access to the documents and list items that are inside of that site. The way that BCS works with this is that if you have external lists in your site that you've created, the SharePoint workspace will take that data offline. So now you have a situation where you could have an external list that's surfacing CRM data. You could take that offline with you. You could work on it on the airplane. When you get to the hotel, you can reconnect, and those changes can be sent back to the external system. All right, so let's talk a little bit about BCS architecture. Well, you know what? Let's take a step back here, and what I'd like to do is let's do a simple demo first so you can see why you care about this, and then we'll come back and discuss the architecture, because I think it'll stick better if we do that. So what I'm going to do is let's go ahead and fire up SQL Server here. So what we're going to do is we're going to do the simple, obligatory BCS demo that has to be done in every BCS talk, which is the creation of an external list without any code. And what I'm going to do is we're going to pick on this database right here called MiniCRM. And my MiniCRM database is really pretty straightforward. All it is a database that has some first name, last name, title information, you know, like a contact list in SharePoint. So what my idea here is to create this external list that maps to this database table. So in order to do this, we're all the way, you know, and sort of keeping an eye on where we are on the spectrum, we're all the way on one side of the spectrum, which is the complete no-code solution. And this is what we like to call a simple BCS solution. So a simple BCS solution begins by opening the SharePoint Designer. And inside the SharePoint Designer, you have this new object navigation system over here on the left. So you kind of pick the category of things that you care about. And you'll notice that there's a category called external content types. And if you click on the external content types, then it's going to show you all the different external content types that are defined. And from here, we can go ahead and define a new one. So let's come up here and say we're going to create a new external content type. And when we do that, we get a sort of a summary screen here where we can give a name for our external content types. So let's just call this Tech Days Attendee. And we'll pretend our table is full of people that are attending Tech Days. And then you can see it has a name and a display name. And it also offers you a place to specify a namespace. So the namespace is like any namespace. It just removes ambiguity if you have multiple things with the same name, which is easily possible when you're making a lot of these. And then I can come down here and say, well, what kind of office item is this? So if this were an office item, it would probably act more like a contact than it would an appointment, a task, or a post. So we're going to say, let's make this into an Outlook contact as well. All right, once I've got that sort of basic information down, I can come up here to the Operations Design view, click on that, and now what I'll be able to do is go ahead and select external systems that I want to connect with. So I can do that by coming up here and selecting Add a Connection. And when I do, you'll notice that there are three different kinds of connections that I can add. One is a SQL Server connection. That's pretty obvious. So if I want to connect to a SQL database, I can use that one. If I'd like to connect to a WCF service, I have an explicit connector for that one as well. And then there's a third one called the .NET type. We'll get to that one a little bit later, but the .NET type is essentially this .NET assembly connector that you're going to write yourself from scratch, and then we're going to be able to connect using an assembly that you wrote. So you're getting a couple out of the box here, and you're getting custom ones that you can write. I'll mention briefly that there is a fourth kind, which is referred to as a custom connector. And just so that we don't have a lot of confusion, a custom connector is really a connector that's designed to attach to a certain kind of system generically. So you might write a custom connector, for example, to connect to Microsoft Exchange. And the idea is that if you did that, then it would be much like the SQL one or the WCF one, where you sort of pick that one, and it knows how to connect to any Exchange server that you have. When you write a .NET assembly connector, again, which we'll do later, this is a connector that is specific to one system. So you write a .NET assembly connector for your Microsoft Exchange. If you're a third-party vendor, you write a connector for everyone's. And why would you do that? Well, the reason you would do that is that the .NET assembly connector, because it's specific, allows you to implement things like business rules that are specific to your organization, to merge your data with data from multiple data sources, things that you would only do in your organization and don't generalize to other organizations. So these would be all the different types that you can pick from. So we'll go ahead and pick SQL Server here. And then you can see that it's asking me for the server, so classic connection stuff. So the server where I want to connect, the database that I want to connect to. And then I can give it a name. I'll call it Tech Days Attendee Table. How's that? Okay. And then I can pick how I want to connect. And it says three options here: connect with the user's identity, connect with impersonated Windows identity, or connect with impersonated custom identity. Now, brief explanation on this. I could spend another whole session and then some talking to you about security, because if you just take a step back and think about it, here you are in SharePoint and you're looking at something that's coming from an external system. Who's getting that? Do they have the rights to read it? Do they have the rights to write to it? right? How many hops am I making before I get there? There's an awful lot to consider. Is it a claims-based system? Is it a Windows-based system? Does it have its own proprietary system where I'm supposed to provide a username and password? How am I connecting to that? So I think you can see very quickly that security is a major area of planning in all of these solutions. But basically what you're being presented with here is the option to connect with the identity of the person who is actually looking at the external content type. That's the one that's checked. So that's great for demos. It's great for goofing around on your machine, but it's great for almost nothing else, primarily because of what's known as the double hop rule. So let me ask you, how many folks in here have Kerberos implemented at their location? Yes, there are the two people. Okay, a few more, right? So the problem is most organizations use NTLM. And the problem with NTLM authentication under Windows is that if you make two hops from where you are to the source, you'll lose the identity of the person who's calling. So if you're in the browser and you call SharePoint, SharePoint's set up to impersonate you, right? So it goes, okay, I'm still Scott when I get here. But then when SharePoint reaches out to talk to the backend SQL database, not allowed to be Scott anymore. And that's really a security issue. It's designed to make sure that if a virus takes over your credentials, it can't run around the network doing things in your name. Kerberos doesn't have that limitation because it's a much more secure protocol, and neither does claims authentication, which I think becomes more and more important inside of SharePoint. So those two things will get you out of that. But most, as we saw by our raised hands, most really have NTLM authentication. So this option won't work for you under NTLM, except if you're doing some testing and presentations like I am. So the other two options, connect with an impersonated identity, either a Windows identity or a custom identity. What that does is it brings into play something called the Secure Store Service, the SSS. The Secure Store Service is the next version of the single sign-on system, or SSO, under MOS 2007. And essentially, it is a credential mapping system. So what it does is it takes your Windows account, it looks at it, and then it takes the name of the external system you want to talk to, and it returns to you a set of credentials that work for that external system. So you can eliminate the double hop problem by invoking SSS, because that happens on the server, and then SharePoint picks up those credentials and calls out to the external database. And you can do either a Windows identity, which means that the backend system supports Windows, or a custom, which means that the backend system expects perhaps a custom proprietary user ID and password, like a plain text entered into some form. And SSS will support any of those. There are other options as well that aren't quite visible in this dialogue, but we're going to go ahead and stick with connect with the user identity, and we'll go ahead and press OK. So it's going to chug for a second, and then should show up. And there's our Tech Days attendees table. So now what we need to do is we need to actually define our external content type, the fields and the operations that we wish to perform. Now, if you're working on a database table like this, then SharePoint Designer can infer an awful lot about what it takes to work on the database, because it knows SQL. So what that means is you can come here to the place where your data is, right-click it, and you can say create all operations. So remember, this system is intended to give you full CRUD operations. So we can read multiple items from the source. We can read one item in detail from the source. We can write back. We can create new ones. We can delete. And we can search. So those are all the things that we can do. And if you look through the options here, you'll see that there are individual items here for creating a read operation or a new operation. But because we're using a database, I can pretty much just say, hey, make everything for me, and go ahead and click on that. And then what it'll do is it'll bring up a wizard, because while it knows a tremendous amount about how to read and write to a database, it can't know everything. So it brings up this little wizard here, and what it's going to do is get the additional information it needs from me in order to complete the definition of the ECT. Now, this wizard, even at this point in the game, I still think is a little bit confusing. So what I like to tell everybody is sort of think of it as a game. And what happens is, as you hit next, you see error messages down in the bottom. And the game is get the error messages to go away. And if the error messages go away, you've got a valid ECT. All right? So that's all you have to remember. If you look down here, I mean, you can see the detail in the error messages. We get some guidance here. It says the following properties need to be mapped to data source elements with compatible data types, last name, full name. What the heck is all that? Well, basically what it's telling me is I wanted this thing to behave like a contact in Outlook. So it says I need a last name or a full name so that so Outlook can understand what it is. So we'll come up to last name, and we'll go down to the office property picker, and we'll come up here, scroll down, and we'll say make that last name. That's good. Ooh, and look, an error message went away. All right, so we're getting closer. Next one says at least one identifier should be specified. Well, that's saying I need a primary key, right? Because if I'm going to deal with your external system and I go to edit something, I need a way to uniquely identify that so I can edit the right one. So we'll pick ID and then say map that to the identifier, and two error messages have gone away. Next one says no fields have been selected to be shown in the external item picker control. Well, one of the things that I said is that, you know, once you get the data into SharePoint, you can use it in interesting ways, and you can use it in lookup fields. Another one that I hadn't mentioned that this reminds me of is that you can also use them as fields inside of Word documents. And inside of Word documents, if you were, you know, writing a proposal to a customer or what have you, or maybe a thank you note to our Tech Days attendees, you could simply go to the field in the document and pick someone and put them right into the document. But this is telling me, look, I need something in the picker control that I can show people. So will you, you know, tell me what I should show them in the picker control? And we'll just go to last name and say, please show that in the picker control. And things are going away. Looks good. For this data source item, read-only and required properties have been set to true. This is a valid combination, but it should only be used for write-once scenarios. I go, okay, we can live with that one. So we'll actually leave that there. I'll go ahead and click next. Okay, now what happens is it says it's strongly recommended to add a filter to this. So what's going on here? Well, one of the problems you have when you write your own web parts to go against external systems and you include your own ADO.NET code, you have to handle the select star problem, right? So we don't want a user to be able to drag back, you know, X number of gigabytes of data and try and show it in a list box and then put that web part on the homepage of the portal and no one understands why portal runs slow. So one of the great things about BCS is it has throttling built in. So even if you blow it and you create something horrendous, there are throttles outside of what you specify that will actually stop you. So you're only going to be able to bring back a few thousand before it stops you cold. But here, we really want to throttle it down to something even smaller so that we can bring back, you know, groups of items and page through them, or just keep somebody from being able to drag back the whole database. So we're going to come back here and say add a filter. And then when you do it, you can see you sort of get this filter parameter that appears undefined over here. The little trick is you have to click on the link over here that says click to add. And then we do it, it brings up a filter configuration dialog where we can give it a name. So we'll just call this the limit filter, like that. Okay. And then there are all the different kinds of filters I can have. So I'll drop this thing down, and you can see that I'm given a choice for comparison, limit, page number, timestamp, wildcard. We're going to pick limit, but I want to point out that the other filters that are here, and there are indeed others that are not being shown in this list right now, are designed to perform other operations for you. So one of the things that can be confusing is that the filter is often used in the context of an argument into a method. So if you have an operation, for example, that returns returns attendees to you and you're paging it, then you're going to have a page number filter. But that's basically the input that says what page number do you want. So don't let that word filter confuse you. When you get sort of under the covers, it looks an awful lot like an argument that's being passed into your operation. I think they use it because there are some that are more generic, like this limit filter, which basically just hard stops and won't let us bring back any more than we specify. So we're going to do that. We're going to specify a limit. And then we're not quite done yet. We have to come over here. You can see the limit's been specified, but now I got to tell it what it is. So we're going to go ahead and put in 100, so you can't bring back more than 100. And then if I just leave that box, you can see now magically all the error messages are gone. So it's good. We've got ourselves a good ECT. And I'm going to go ahead and click Finish. All right. Now, at this point, you'll see the little disk icon up here that says we need to save our changes. So let's go ahead and do that. As a side note, while this is saving, don't you find it interesting that we're still using a floppy disk icon to do saving? Right? I mean, think about it. How many generations we got to go through before, you know, some programmer says, I have no idea what that icon is. Right? I just find that interesting. All right, so it saved off. And the question is, where did it save to? Well, if we come back to central administration, one of the key components of BCS is what's called the Business Data Connectivity Service. So Business Data Connectivity Service, you'll notice that the acronym or the three letters for that are BDC. So for my BDC folks in 2007, we hung on to the three letters BDC, but we changed what they mean. So it's now Business Data Connectivity. But if you come in here to the Business Data Connectivity Service by saying Manage Service Applications, and then scroll down till you find Business Data Connectivity Services, and you say manage, it will take you to a place where you can manage the BDC service. And for right now, all I want to point out to you is that this is where our ECT went. So when I saved it out of the SharePoint Designer, it got saved into a metadata store that's being managed by Business Connectivity Services. It's basically on the server in a database waiting to be used. Okay, so at this point then, we pretty much have our ECT in play. Let's go now to SharePoint here, and we'll just go to the BCS site that we're working on. Drop this thing down, and we'll say View All Site Content. And from here, we'll click Create. And then we're going to come in and select to create a list. And the type of list that we want to create is this external list. So go ahead and say, let's create one of those. And we'll just call it Tech Days Attendees, like that. Great. And now I have to say what external content type is backing this list. So you'll see down here I have a little picker. I'll go ahead and bring that up. Takes a second. All right, and it brings up all the different external content types that I can select to back this list. Now, where's this coming from? It's coming from the Business Data Connectivity Service, right? So that's where the ECTs are. So basically, we've done a read from the Business Data Connectivity Service. We presented the ones that were available. We're going to pick Tech Days Attendee, of course. We'll click OK. Then we say Create. And if we've done everything right and life is good, you get the little spinning icon for just a second, and voila, there's our list, right? So now this list is actually being backed by the database. So if we pick on, like, Mr. Gustavos here, right, or, right, Achong, right, Gustavos, you can see Gustavos Achong. Let's go up here and just do, well, actually, let's check in the database first, right? We need to look in the database. So there's Gustavos Achong, right? So now we'll come up here and we'll drop this guy down and say edit. And let's just rudely add an S to the last name right there and click save. Okay, saves. So there's our S right there. Come back to SQL Server, do an execute of this, and then sure enough, there's the S right there. All right, so even though it appears like a list to the end user, we're backing this external system. Now, there's all kinds, as you can imagine, of the security pieces that are involved here about who has rights to do what, right? But remember, right now, I'm connecting as the person who's looking at the list. So I need rights in the database under the scenario we're in to be able to read and write it. I'm going to be limited by whatever SQL Server says that I can do. Okay, but as I said a couple of times already, there are certainly much more advanced scenarios that we can get in. Okay, now, we're not done, because just if it were just the ability to perform CRUD operations on this list, I would agree with everyone that says, oh, this is just the next version of BDC, because BDC was primarily a read-only solution, and here we are writing. But it's really much more than that. Remember earlier I specified that we wanted our list to behave like a contact in Outlook. So if you come up here to the ribbon now, you'll see this button that says Connect to Outlook. So what I'm going to do is go ahead and click on that. And when I do that, it does a little bit of processing here. And what it's actually doing is building me a Visto ClickOnce package. And here's my Visto ClickOnce package. It's now asking me if I want to install that on my client. So I'll say, sure, I have no idea what that is, but let's install it. Okay, and it chugs for just a second here as it does the install. You can watch it go by. And then it says, okay, you're all done. You can close this. And I do. And then if I wait with my hands off for just a second, I can see my hard drives clacking just a little bit there. It actually opens Outlook for me. If you look down there in the lower right, you'll see Outlook is opening. And I bring this thing up. And there it is. It's brought in all that information into Outlook. Now, this is not really the best view of this information. So let's switch to the all data view here, where I've just mocked up the view a little bit better so we can see everything. And then if we come in here, let's make sure we're on the Tech Days attendees, right? Good. If we come in here, we can see this same record where we've rudely added that S. And now that we're in Outlook, we can say, well, that's not right. We need to get rid of that S right there, because that would just be wrong to do that to that person. Then we come back and do a refresh on this. And sure enough, the S is gone. So now we have a scenario where, without any code at all, I was able to create a list in SharePoint that backs this external system. I was able to take that into Outlook and work on it in Outlook in a way that's, you know, very familiar to me. And in fact, if you bring up the actual item in Outlook, you'll see just how familiar it is, because it brings it up inside the same forms that you're used to. We only mapped one field, which is why you're just seeing the one field here. And therefore, all the other ones end up in this place called Tech Days Attendee Details. And if I click on it there, you can see, oh, isn't that sweet? Didn't I remove that S? Yeah. There we go. Oh, was it the first name? Oh, okay. Yeah, it was there. That was the S, right? So it did work. All right, thank you. You saved me. All right, well, you get the idea. So it gives you that nice, familiar environment. We didn't have to write any code at all. All right, let's jump back to the slides now. Okay, so with that in mind, let's talk a little bit about architecture, okay? Because I think it'll, you know, now you'll see how it all comes together. So I want to begin down here where it says external systems. In the external systems portion, these are the connectors. You see the SQL, WCF custom, and .NET assembly connector. We talked about those when we were going through SPD. But basically, the business data connectivity system needs a way to know about the external system and do the translation and connections that are necessary to get there, whether it's talking WCF or talking SQL Server. So now what we'll do is stay with me on the right-hand side, the right-hand block that says SharePoint Server 2010, and we'll move our way up. So the first block you see there is the business data connectivity block. That's the service that we found inside of central administration. It has the external content type repository inside of it, and it also has the BDC server runtime. So the BDC server runtime is the API that talks to the external data types that are in what we refer to as that metadata database. So that's just the API for business data connectivity. There's a whole other type of development that we get involved in where we actually use that API. I'll show you that towards the end of the session. We should be able to get that in. And you can see there's a whole world there involved in actually using the server-side API. Moving our way up is the secure store service. We talked about the secure store service already, but basically it is a service to translate credentials so that when you're accessing these external systems, if they have complex or proprietary credentialing mechanisms, that secure store service helps you to make those connections. Moving our way up, search, workflow, web parts, these are all things that BCS lists can get involved with. We discussed several of those as we went along, but again, many of those require no code at all. So I could go in immediately now that I have the list and use it as a lookup in another list, for example. Moving our way up to the SharePoint site, you can see that we have the external list. We took a look at that. That's great. And we also have the Visto package. So basically what happens when you say connect to Outlook is a click once Visto package is created for you, and it's put in a folder underneath the target list. And then that installer, that click once installer, runs and installs it on the client machine. So that was the prompting that you saw saying, hey, do you want to install this customization? It's basically an add-in that's getting installed on the client machine. And that's going to take us across to the left-hand side over there where you see the Visto package getting installed on the client. So we talked about a bunch of those things, hopefully pretty clear about the components that are on the server side. Now, thinking about the client, one of the nice things about the way that BCS is architected is that BCS is architected with complementary client and server structure. So essentially, what you have on the server is what you have on the client, with a couple notable exceptions. And if we start in the lower part on the client side, where you see business data connectivity, there's a business data connectivity on the client as well. And it begins with what's labeled as the cache, what we call the metadata cache. And the metadata cache is a SQL CE in-memory per-user database. And what happens when you bring a list offline is the ECT information that is stored in the server database is taken and put inside the client database. So that's one of the key things that's going to allow us to work offline. There are several other things that get created on the client side as well when you take the Visto solution over. For example, we create what we call a subscription. A subscription tells the client when it should update the cache from the external database system, in this case, external database, or any external system, because we're going to keep our data in the cache when we're offline. So this is going to allow me to take the list offline, work on it on the airplane, come back to the hotel, reconnect, and have all my changes flow back to the external system. And so periodically, we need to update that. So a subscription is going to say when to do that. You can also see that we have something called the Office Integration Runtime. Actually, the naming on that's kind of changed. It's more appropriate now to call it the BDC Client Runtime, and that's really for that complementary idea. So since we call it the BDC Server Runtime, the preference is to call it the BDC Client Runtime to reflect the fact that they're complementary. But that's your client-side API, and that client-side API can be used to talk to the metadata cache. It can be used to retrieve entities and data. And so in more complex solutions, like if you create your own Visto add-in, you can talk to that API, and you'll have access to the cache data same way as the no-code solution has access to the cache data. Moving our way up to the section that says Office Integration, there are several what are called office business parts. Actually, I'm pretty sure the appropriate term now is external business parts. Everything kind of begins with external now, external business parts. But essentially what these are is these are the components of the out-of-the-box add-in that goes into Outlook that allows it to present the data to you in the UI without having you write any code. So that's kind of the built-in stuff there. But you'll see underneath it, we also have custom code. And again, that's just referencing the fact that we can create our own Visto add-ins for any product, Outlook, Word, Excel, whatever we want. And then we can do the same kinds of things that that BCS is doing. All right, great. So that's our architecture. We did our little basic demo. Now what I want to do is we're going to move on to talk a little bit about connectors, but I want to pause for just a minute to make sure we touch base on the intermediate portion of our spectrum. So when thinking about the spectrum, in fact, if you'll allow me, I'm going to jump to this slide right here. When thinking about the total spectrum of solutions, you've witnessed this no-code solution. I've alluded to the fact that there's this pro-dev code solution where you write everything inside of Visual Studio. And there's also things that are in the middle. So for example, one of the things that we consider to be in the middle is that BCS will automatically create forms for you when you build out your solution. These are the new and edit forms that you see when you make a new item or you edit an item, that type of thing. But you can do what's referred to as upsizing those forms. So for example, you could take the info path forms that get generated, and then you can pop them open and do whatever you want to do with them. You could put in client-side data validation or what have you. So this slide right here is really the only one I've ever seen that shows all the different solutions that you can create with it. So just to explain to you a little bit, if you go to your left, you see basic. If you go to your right, that's advanced. So that spectrum is kind of from the no code to the full code solution. And then the up and down is what types of things can I do on the server? What types of things can I do on the client? So no code solutions that run in the client use Microsoft Word for external fields, as I explained to you earlier, the Outlook solution you just saw, and the SharePoint workspace, all done with no code. The no-code solutions on the server are all done with the SharePoint Designer, as we just saw. If you're doing things on the client, you create your own Visto solutions. There's also a solution that I won't get anywhere near today, but it's something called a declarative solution, which is a solution where you can create XML files that essentially tell the built-in Outlook solution how to behave. So it doesn't require you to write any code per se. You're just writing the XML files that can manipulate the Outlook solution. And so that's also considered sort of an intermediate type of solution. And then finally, the advanced one on the server where you write everything is the .NET assembly connector. OK, so with that in mind, let's back up then to this slide here and talk a little bit about connectors. So the connectors themselves are used to connect to the external systems. That makes sense, right? And they utilize the runtime object model to access the metadata cache, retrieve the information about the external content type and operations to be performed, and then perform those operations on the external system. It also has security wrapped around it. So when you're creating your own connectors, you have to be concerned about how security is managed. How are you making sure that people who access the external data can actually see the results that you're returning to them? Also, for example, if somebody searches your external system, you're now on the hook to make sure that the search results that come back are actually search results that this person is allowed to see, right? So we don't want to have them seeing things they're not allowed to see. So really, as you move down this spectrum, you have a significant amount of responsibility, but a significant amount of control over how things are done. I talked a lot about just how big security can be, but here's a table that'll at least give you a little bit of an overview. If you look down the left-hand side, you can see the different kinds of security that we can get involved in, SQL authentication, straight usernames and passwords that might be in a proprietary security system, NTLM, claims, and then things even like Live ID. Can we get involved with that? And then you see the connectors in the columns there. So if it's a WCF connector, database connector, or a .NET assembly connector you create yourself, well, out of the box, you can see that if you have a WCF connector or a database connector, you just focus on those two columns, you can see naturally SQL authentication is supported by the SQL connector, but not WCF. Straight username and password is supported by both, but you're probably invoking the secure store service to do that. NTLM pass-through, of course, is supported by both. Claims, it really depends on whether or not you've created a claims-aware web service. But if you create a claims-aware web service, then you can pass a claim token. So if SharePoint is in claims-aware mode and you have a WCF service that's claims-aware, you can take the token that somebody passed in to get into SharePoint, and you can pass that back to the back-end WCF service. Now, this is something that not a lot of people are doing today, but it's definitely the future because it eliminates all of our challenges, right? It does, because if I can get into SharePoint with a token and that token has the information necessary to get into the external system as well, security just became a lot easier, right? Just pass the token along. So those are possible. And then Live ID, there's no support for logging into your SQL server using Live ID or something like that, right? And if you did it in WCF, you'd have to write some code to make that happen. But there are scenarios where you can do that. There's a really neat demo that one of the Microsoft guys did where he made an external list out of his movie selections, his online movie selections at Netflix. And then in order to see the list, you went to SharePoint, and if you picked the list, it took you to the Netflix login. You logged in, and then you came back, and you could see the movie list in SharePoint. So you really can integrate things like Live ID into this solution. They're obviously a lot more complex. And then if you look at the .NET Assembly connector, you pretty much have to code everything, right? But that's what I've been saying all along. Yes, NTLM pass-through works, but it always works. Okay, so let's talk, let's move on then to actually do a .NET Assembly connector. I think we talked enough about the basics of it. So before we dive into the code of a .NET Assembly connector, basically what I'd like to do is show you the solution so you can understand why we care about the .NET Assembly connector. And let's just get the project open here. Into BCS folder. External DMS solution. Okay, so the solution that I'm going to show you, the scenario involves an external document management system. So I was asked to create this under the scenario that there are third-party vendors, of course, that have document management systems, and we'd like to see these document management systems accessible through SharePoint. So today, the way that would likely work is that a third-party vendor would create some web parts, right? So if you have an external document management system, a Documentum or what have you, there are likely web parts that you can install in SharePoint 2007 that will show you some hierarchical view of the documents that are in that external document management system. So the question became, well, how can we make that happen inside of BCS and leverage all the safe environment that we get, the ability to, love when this happens, the ability to search it, that type of thing, and use the BCS data in all the interesting ways that we can. Let me just close a couple things down here. Yeah, I don't think we need the SharePoint designer anymore. I think it's just choking on resources. And we'll try it again. That's trouble when you try to run an entire enterprise system on a laptop, right? Okay, so as I said, the idea here is to take an external document management system, surface it in SharePoint, and we want it to be as much as possible like it were a document library, but the documents are somewhere else so that end users can work on them inside of SharePoint in much the same way they work on document libraries, but they don't have to worry that the documents are in this external system. Yes, lovely. It'll come back. I'm not worried. Not a bit. It's going to come back this time. Remember, this is not the final product. So everything was great, except for that heap crash thing that kept happening. Coming, coming. Oh, my gosh. Well, it generally doesn't happen to me that many times. So let's clear out a couple of other things. I've seen it before. That's why I'm not worried. There we go. Told you. Told you it'd be all right. All right. So let's go ahead and pull the project up again. Actually, let me demo it. Just make sure we're in good shape with that. Okay, so let me show you the solution that we have here. So this is going to be an all-code solution where we're not using any of the out-of-the-box stuff. We basically have created a web part here that you're looking at, and I'm using the BCS API to do all the work under the covers. The end result of this is not that interesting, but that's the whole point, I think, right? We're trying to make it look just like it were just a document library. So here we are. You can see we've got some documents here. Here's some Word documents, some folders. I can click on a folder like invoices. It opens up. You can see the invoices that are inside. We also have some paging implemented, so just so that you can follow it here. We're basically showing five items, and then I can click on this and go to page number two. There's page number two. You get the idea. And I can drill into more folders, right? And then I can even click on a document, and it'll bring it down for me, so I have access to the documents, right? So a lot of the behavior that you would expect from a document library is right here in front of you, but all of this is outside of SharePoint, every bit of it. All right, so let's go see how it was done. Okay, so here it is right here. Okay, so the first thing to understand is just the data layer here so that you are clear about what it is we're accessing. So there's a data layer right here, external DMS data. Let's go ahead and pop that open. And it has in it a SQL CE database. So to keep it simple and portable, I've created a database here that's just SQL CE. We can open it right here so you'll get an idea. Here's the documents table. We can come in here, right-click the documents table, and say, just show me that data. And you'll see that it's pretty straightforward stuff. So we have documents with names in them. Here are their IDs, right? We've designated a field here that says whether or not it's a folder. So it can either be a folder or a document. And then we have the parent ID. So the way that I'm implementing the hierarchical structure here is that each of these has a parent ID. And if you sort of glance at these, you'll see they're 33, 34, and 35. And then if we scroll down, you'll see items 33, 34, and 35 are actually folders. So they have their is folder property set to true. So we kept it pretty simple. But basically, the idea here was to take a flat table, but make it so we could show a hierarchy of documents. And then the documents themselves are here inside the database. So this contents field has binary data in it. That's the real Word document. So this is my little document management system. I also have users and permission tables over here. So we've got security built into it as well. If we take a look a little bit deeper in here, we have also built into this is entity framework. So when I was talking to you a little bit about Link earlier, I mentioned Entity Framework a couple of times, but Entity Framework provides this ORM layer, this object relational mapping layer, that allows us to use Link against databases. So even though we're not talking Link here, I just want to point out to you how this just keeps showing up again and again and again. So I'm making a data layer. And I don't really want to talk directly to the database, so I've used the entity framework to create an entity model, and this is the designer for the entity model right here. And when I read and write to the database, you're going to see that I'm just using link queries to do it, so it makes it a lot easier. And that's my data layer. That represents the external system I want to talk to, that project. Okay, so that's good. So now what we need to do is we need to connect to that external system. So this is where my .NET assembly connector comes into play. So I don't have a connector, a built-in connector, that knows how to talk to my external document management system, right? I made this up. So I need to create my own connector for doing that. And here inside of Visual Studio 2010, if I come down here and say File, New, Project, you've already seen several times that there's a whole set of projects for SharePoint 2010. And the one that we care about is this one called the Business Data Connectivity Model. So essentially what this project does, everything is still a big XML file that gets created. So when I made that ECT in the SharePoint Designer, it was building up an XML file behind the scenes. I didn't have to look at it. And that's what was getting saved out into the ECT database. And the Business Data Connectivity Model also builds an XML file that defines an entity, but it does something very special. It bonds that entity with an assembly that I make. So it says when you want to read a particular entity, you need to call a method in this following assembly, and that's how you're going to do it, as opposed to a connector just saying, I'm going to execute a SQL query against a back end. So that's what's special about this project. It says the connector is always going to be an assembly, and I'm going to tell you what methods in the assembly you need to call when you'd like to read an item or search for something or what have you. So we've got the project right here. It's called External DMS Connector. And when you create your project, what you're going to see is a design surface like this. So this is a design surface where you can design your entity. And the entity, or the external content type that I'm creating, is called appropriately document. So you can come into this, and you'll see a couple of things right away. Like, first of all, we have the identifier here. So this is the same thing we had in the SharePoint Designer. This is essentially the primary key. So it wants to know the primary key for our external content type. We're calling it ID, and it has INT32 over here. You can see it's an INT32 type. And that makes sense, because that's what our backend is, right? We've got an ID with an INT32 type. We have several methods here. Read document, read folder, read contents, read all items. And as you work your way through these different operations that are defined, there's this method detail section down here at the bottom. And this is perhaps the most confusing part when you first come into this project. You're defining an operation like read all items, and that's as basic as we can get. That operation is actually going to return everything from the database. And I'm primarily doing that for demonstration purposes and to keep it simple. But if you look down here in the method details section, you can see that we have read all items. And then there's a method instance down here. So there's some confusing terminology within BCS. And if you were to go look in the XML model itself, you basically see that there are prototypes and then there are instances of those things. So as you take on more and more of the responsibility for creating a BCS solution, what you find is you get closer and closer to that. And so now you have to get straight in your head, am I prototyping this method or creating an instance of this method, that type of thing. And you can see it's kind of reflected here in the designer that I'm closer to the bone than I was in SPD. Within other ones, though, so this is read all items, it basically brings back everything. There's another operation here called read folder, and read folder just gives me the documents that are in a particular folder. You can see this kind of makes sense because it has an in parameter right here, which is the folder ID of the folder I want to read. Okay, and it has a page number, which is which page number of all the ones that are in the folder, you know, do you want to read? So I can page them as you saw in the demo. So you can see that these kind of function like methods with input arguments, right? But they're really operations with filters. That's how you talk about them. So we have these operations with filters. Now, everything I'm doing here in the designer is building up the XML model. And if I go ahead and close the designer here, we can come over to the solution. The model has a BDCM extension, and if I right-click it, I can say open with, and I'll say let's open it with an XML editor, and then you're going to get your first look at what's actually going on in here. So everything we did in the SharePoint Designer, everything we're doing here in the modeling tool is generating all this. Okay. Now, under 2007, when this first came out as the BDC, we had to write this by hand. Had to write it all by hand, right? Real He-Man, right? Old school guys. Yep. So we really come a long way in the creation of this. But it's important to know that this is what's going on. You've got a nice little designer that you're working with, but in the end, you're making this giant XML file. And if we look in here, let's do one last thing while we're floating around here. Look at this piece right here. Okay, this is the name of the content type that we've got, okay? And the assembly and class where this thing is being implemented. That's the key thing. So remember I told you that what this project really does is it takes an external content type and binds it to your assembly. So now when somebody says, I want to search something, you're going to get a method call, and you decide what it means to search. That's really what's happening here. So the way that's embodied in the project, the way you'll see that in the project, and let's not save that, okay? The way you'll see that in the project is in the form of two classes. Over here in the solution, you'll see we have a document class. And this document class represents my ECT. And my ECT, the properties, the fields, the things that I want to come back are being bound to this class. So these are the fields that I can return to you. Name, parent ID, type, version ID. This makes sense because that's what was in the database, right? But these could be anything I want them to be. That's a really important thing. They're not these because that's what's in the database, you know, strictly speaking. These are the things I want to return. So I could go into the database and I could make new fields by performing operations on certain fields and binding them together or what have you. I could even use multiple external systems and provide that information in one ECT. So you have a lot of control here over what it is that you want to return. And then for each one of the operations that's performed, you'll find those in a second class called Document Service. The Document Service class, or the service class for your ECT, contains the operations that will be performed. And if you look in here, you'll see read all items, read document, read contents, right? So what's happening is when I define those operations in the design surface, they get bound to a method call within this class. And that's really cool because what that means is that now if an external list calls read all items, I get to define what that means. And what I do is I define that as meaning this. I create a context in link, and this context is using entity framework. So basically, it's using a connection string here that is connecting to the backend database through the entity framework. And then I run a link query. So this was return all items. So I say from D in documents, order by name, return everything. And then remember when we were talking about link to SharePoint, I said the pattern is basically run query loop through results. So there's run query, here's loop through results, and basically what I'm doing is building up now a generic list of documents that I want to return to you. And then I just return that. So if you call read all items, I'm going to collect everything together and send it off to you. Now at this point, I could just simply stop here and make an external list directly off of this. So we've coded the backend part, the connector part, but I haven't coded anything for the UI at this point and don't have to. I could stop right now and people can make external lists off of what I've done. And in fact, I've done that here. If we come back to the BCS site, you can see that I have a list over here called external DMS flat list, and you'll see why in just a second. But if we just, let's just come in here to make sure that we're clear about it. If we say create, and we say we'd like to create an external list, then we come to the picker, you can see that it's already showing up here in the picker, external DMS connector.document, right? So by creating the .NET assembly connector, you will show in the picker and somebody can just back you right away, right? So that you can stop there and be done. The trouble with that for us in the scenario that we're describing is doing that looks like this, okay? And this shouldn't surprise you a bit because what I'm doing is building up a bunch of documents and returning them to you. And this pretty much looks like the table in the background, right? So you come down here and you can see the folders, 33, 34, and 35 are the folders. And we can see the parent IDs that are here, 33, 34, and 35. So I'm getting the information. These are the documents. But what am I not getting? I'm not getting a hierarchical view. And there's no mechanism in this UI for me to download the document. You with me on that? So there's going to be situations in which the data in the external system can't be presented correctly in a simple external list. So you write the .NET assembly connector because the connectors you have don't work with the external system that you want to talk to, right? Don't have a connector for my external document management system. You write a front end against that because the presentation of that data doesn't work in an external list. So I got to go further, okay? So that's exactly where we are. We'll need to write a little bit more. Just rounding this out a little bit, let's take a look at the operations. So this was read all items. That's great. Pretty easy. Here is read folder. Read folder takes the folder, the parent ID of the folder you want to talk to, and the page number that you want to show. And then it comes down here, and it runs a link query that basically says, give me back the documents that are in that folder by page. Now, I should point out to you here, this little note you'll see, it says that SQL CE does not really support paging through link. So what I had to do was load the entire database in memory and then come down here and run a second query against the fully loaded, where you'll see that I skip the page number and then take is the method, take the ones that I want. So when we did the RESTful interface, we looked at skip and top, right? If you remember, those were arguments we could provide, skip and top. In link, it's skip and take. So if your link provider supports skip and take, you can pull a page out of that very easily. And that's really important because if written correctly, you're only going to bring back the records you want, right? So you can be very respectful of your resources by bringing back the 5 records you want. This demo suffers from the fact that I just can't do that in SQL CE. So I drag the whole thing into database and then run a secondary link query on what I've got in memory to do the paging. But you get the idea. Okay. Other interesting methods here. Probably the next one that's interesting is the read contents method. So the read contents method returns the document for download. Notice that it has an out parameter, which is a stream. Now, the reason that we want to stop here is because out of the box, when you're in SharePoint Designer, there are all kinds of operations that are possible in BCS that the SharePoint Designer simply does not support. And this is one fine example of that. So there is no mechanism in the SharePoint Designer without code, right, to do a no-code solution that returns a stream from a back-end source. So if you want to return a stream, downloading the document, then you have to write a .NET assembly connector yourself because it's the only way that you're going to get access to the stream-based operations, right? And there are many others just like that that are important. Okay, so once I have the .NET assembly connector written, then it's a simple matter of coming up here to the project, right-clicking it, and saying deploy the project. And when I do a deploy of it, then as I already showed you, it would be immediately available for use to back an external list. But we want to go beyond that. Okay, so how do we do it? Well, the way we're going to do it is we're going to create a web part. And that web part will be our new front end. So here in the solution, we have external DMS web parts. This is not a visual web part, so it's pretty easy for us to walk through. Let's just go ahead and do a full screen on this. Most of this is boring because it's just standard web part stuff. So, you know, you can see create child controls. This is just me creating the UI, right? Not too exciting there. You can see that I have bound columns that I'm using for the data that comes back to display. Not that interesting. Okay. The real interesting stuff happens down here on the pre-render, just before the web part is shown. And the part where I really want to focus you is this stuff right here. These two sort of paragraphs of code. This is using the BDC server-side runtime, or the API for the BDC on the server, to access the external content type and call its operations. So you can see this first object right here, the BDC service application. The BDC service application proxy, it's called, does a get SPC service, does a get. And what it does is it returns to me the BDC service. So I showed you earlier that all these content types are kept, the external content types are kept inside the business data connectivity service database. So in order for me to access them and use them in my code, I first need a connection to the BDC service. That's what that line of code is doing for us. Once I have the connection, I can then use this one, database-backed metadata catalog, to open the metadata catalog up. So now I've connected with the service. I can reach into the database, and now I have access to all the external content types. I call getEntity, and I pass in the namespace and the name of the ECT that I want. So now I've got the definition for that document that was defined inside of our .NET Assembly connector. I can retrieve the line of business system, so information about what system I'm talking to. It's called external DMS system in our sample here. And then what I'm going to do is come down and get the method instance for reading a particular folder. So this is going to give me access to that method that takes as an input page number and parent ID and returns the entities in that folder, the entity instances in that folder. So here I am getting that method instance. And then I have to build up what's called a filter collection. So I've said a couple of times that filters are basically inputs to the operations. So it's a little goofy the way you have to do it. I know that filter 0 is a comparison filter and filter 1 is a page number filter. But if you look closely, you can see I'm setting it to the ID of the parent folder that I care about and the page number that I want returned. So these become the inputs. And then I say, get me all the entity instances, get me the items where read folder is called and these filters are passed in. And then my operation mode is online, which basically means that I expect to be able to call directly to the backend store. So this isn't going to use any cached information. It's going to retrieve this stuff directly from the back. And then you can see that all I do is loop through this, and now hopefully it's clear, right? Once I've got my collection of information, I can present that in a hierarchy just by building up a tree view, which is exactly what I do, right? And now that it's clear how the methods are called, hopefully it's also clear to you that you can call the streaming method as well and just get back a stream. And now you can download documents and everything else. So what we did was, we first took control of the back end, how we connect to the external line of business data store in order to do things that weren't supported out of the box in SPD. And then we wrote ourselves a web part that used the API to be able to present it in the way that we wanted. Okay, and now rounding this entire thing out, we would very much like to have a client-side story as well. So we've got that here, and the way that we'll do it is by creating our own add-in. We've got the add-in in the project already. Yep. So here's my add-in, external DMS add-in. Okay. And I'm going to go ahead and run that for you. We just got a few minutes left, but I want to go ahead and run the solution for you so you can see it in action. So remember, the key to BCS is it's complementary, right? We want to be able to do things on the client that we can do on the server. Loading up my add-in. Okay, and we come up here, and if you look at the ribbon, we have DMS, Document Management System, on the tab. I can click on Documents, and look at this. I've got a view of the Document Management System here, and if I click on one of these documents, it opens inside Word. The content in here is pretty trivial. You can just see it's Document 6 or what have you. But you get the idea, okay? This solution is actually reading data out of the client-side cache. If it can't find it in the client-side cache, it'll ask for a query of the back-end system. But if that system isn't online, we'll live with whatever is inside the cache. You can see that this is another whole area. We could spend an awful lot of time talking about how to create this. But I think the thing that I want to leave you with is that if we come in and we look at the code behind the custom task pane, what you'll find is that because of this complementary architecture, I can scroll down here, and you will see largely the same code that I was just showing you on the server. But instead of talking to the server, We're talking to the remote shared file backed metadata catalog, which means the cache that's on the client. So I can write the same kind of code, but I'm writing it on the client now. And then if you look down here, you'll notice that when I run the method this time, instead of saying I expect to be online, I'm saying I expect to be cached, so I'll read the cache. But I'm also providing a time span that says I expect the data in the cache to be 10 minutes fresh. If it's older than 10 minutes, I want you to requery the back end if it's available. Okay? So you have a tremendous amount of control how these things are handled offline. You could also imagine that there's all kinds of issues with conflict resolution, right? So now I've got it offline. I change a bunch of things. You change a bunch of things, right? And hopefully you'll see that this is really quite a deep topic, and we're pretty much just able to scratch the surface. The very last thing I'll show you, and then I think we'll be, oh, perfect, right on time. The very last thing I want to mention to you is that, you know, when we do our solution here in inside of BCS, if we just come back and look at that web part that we were working on, you know, we want people to be able to take our solution offline, and we'd very much like them to be able to do that from within SharePoint. Unfortunately, the button that says sync with Outlook or what have you, that button isn't going to work for our custom solution. There's no way for my custom solution to sort of leverage the take this thing offline. So instead, what you have to do is you have to create something called a data-only solution. A data-only solution is a whole other topic, but it rounds out everything, because what you can do is create your own Visto ClickOnce package. That's basically what you're doing. And then you can provide a link that people can click, and you can do exactly what BCS does. So now what you got is you have all the same things that BCS has, but you have complete control over every aspect of it, back end, front end, how it's deployed from the server. And hopefully what you think is that it really opens up a lot of possibilities about how you can get Office and SharePoint to work together. So with that, I think we've touched on just about everything I could possibly show you in an hour and 15 minutes. I'll hang out here if you guys have some questions after the fact. But other than that, we're done. Thank you.